There's going to be some talk on the program today about letting your children watch television and why that's a good thing. Now, I don't want you to panic. If you have children listening to this, I'm not going to swear at them. I do swear on the program, but I'm not going to swear directly at your children, so don't worry. This program isn't for children. I'm just saying I'm not going to swear at your children. So, it's not suitable for children anyway, and never has been. Or just don't get the idea that I'm going to start swearing directly at your children. I would never do that. That's your job. I would never take that away from you. While I may well have opinions on how you should raise your children, I'm not going to intervene and do it myself. No, that would be a bit much. That'd be almost like kidnapping, and I wouldn't do that. I'm not going to reach in through whatever device you're listening to this on and grab your children and start telling them what they should or shouldn't do, what time to go to bed at, what they should have for their dinner. No, you probably don't tell your children what they should have for their dinner, do you? No, you just make it. You make them a nice, fresh, home-cooked meal 3 times a day. You get up in the morning, you get out your porridge oats that you grew from scratch and which you left soaking overnight or whatever you do to porridge oats. I've never made porridge oats. I've made instant porridge. It comes as a powder and you add milk and you put it in the microwave for exactly the right amount of time stated on the label. And then 60% of the time it comes out incorrect and you have to start again. So I can't imagine what hellish experience it is to make actual porridge from scratch, or even from whatever comes in that big bag of stuff you get. These porridge people, they buy this big bag of stuff and they're very proud of it. They'll say, I can feed my family from this big bag of stuff that I got in Lidl for 29 cents a day. And just pour this stuff into a pot and make sure to stand at the cooker for 3 hours while it's cooking and just make sure I do all the correct stuff and it comes out great. And then I put it in front of my children and I say, what in the name of Christ is this? No, thank you very much. No, thank you very much. They always say no, thank you very much because I've raised them to be polite. Still, I would tell them then they're being impolite because although they're saying polite words, no, thank you very much is a polite word. It's impolite for them to reject my cooking. That's what you think. I'll be telling you later in the program about this thing called sugar puffs. It's a very fine breakfast product. You might be better off giving that to your children. Anyway, it's not my place to tell you how to raise your children any more than it's my place to tell you how to raise that flour that you use in your home baking. You probably make brown bread from scratch that you serve with your porridge. You give them orange juice as well. Oh no, you probably don't. Wait, do porridge people give their children orange juice? They probably don't. And they think, oh no, orange juice is disgusting. It's full of sugar. Oranges are created directly by sunlight. If you're a particularly disgusting, evil little child during the summer when you were bored, you get a magnifying glass and you direct the sunlight towards an insect that was on the ground and you'd burn the insect. And that's how oranges are made. Oranges are made by directing the sunlight, concentrating it into this plant. So it creates a ball of orangeness that's just packed full of sunlight and sugar. You tell yourself, no, I'm not giving that to my children. That's disgusting. It's created by torture. Anyway, you've raised your children on this porridge stuff, which we all know. Just because you eat something that looks like brains, that doesn't mean it converts itself into brain matter. No. Your body takes in this food and it sends it wherever there's a need or a vacancy. Just as if you eat chocolate, it doesn't automatically... Oh no, wait, that's disgusting. We won't say that. Say if your body ingests something that looks like flesh. If you feed your child pork belly, it doesn't automatically go to their belly. No, that can go anywhere. It might go to the brain. It might go to the respiratory system. It might go to the feet. might go into their bones in lieu of calcium because they haven't had enough milk. So their bones are brittle. So your body says, oh, wait, I wonder what this is. Could this help with the brittle bones thing? Your body doesn't know. Your child's body sends that to the bones anyway to see if it'll do anything. Will it convert it into some sort of bone material? And if it doesn't work, it just waits and tries the next thing that comes in. Whatever else comes in along the conveyor belt known as your child's mouth. Whatever shit you're feeding them. So that's breakfast, and then lunchtime. Your child is probably at school, is it? I shouldn't call your child it. I don't know its name, though, so I have to. For the purposes of this talk, your child is an it, because I don't know its name. I'm not being rude when I'm calling your child it. I just don't know its name. I don't think there's anything wrong with referring to your child the same way I refer to an inanimate object. Not necessarily an inanimate object. It can refer to an inanimate object, but it can also refer to a very, very, very animate object. The Mona Lisa, the painting, is an it. It's an inanimate object, but it's a very valuable one and very impressive. I know the Mona Lisa is a she, but the painting of the Mona Lisa, that's an it. So if I call your child an it, don't assume that that's an insult. No. Your child is an it is not a bad thing. I don't know your child's name, nor do I want to know your child's name. And even if I did know your child's name, I would never speak it on here. I'm not going to name your child on here on a podcast. That would be very irresponsible. You should never give your children's names out on the internet. Don't give your child's names out on the internet, especially not to someone like me who you don't know. I mean, I'm perfectly trustworthy. Nothing would come of it. You don't know that. For all you know, I could be some maniacal serial killer who eats kittens. A terrible, terrible, terrible human being. And there's no way you'd know. So no, don't give me your child's names. That's an appalling thing to do. Don't do that. Anyway, you know, your child isn't it. The next thing you do after your porridge thing is you give your child a packed lunch to bring to school with it. Now, you can't just go, here's the leftovers from the porridge. Because that's just, what's it going to do with that cold porridge? No. They probably have portable microwaves now that fit inside a lunchbox, do they? I don't know. When I was going to school, you had a lunchbox and you had a plasticky flask thing. And the plasticky flask thing contained approximately 2 small cups of milky, sugary tea. Now, I don't know what was in the other children's flasks. I always assumed it was tea, but maybe it wasn't. I grew up in a family that gave tea to their children. At every meal we had tea. It was tea, 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 tea this, tea that. Every single day you get tea, you put milk and sugar in it. In fact, I gave up sugar when I was 6 or 7. I gave up sugar in my tea. I remember being very proud of myself. Said, I'm giving up sugar in my tea, and didn't miss it at all until I discovered coffee. Now, as anyone will tell you who switched from tea to coffee, coffee without sugar is a very, very, very different thing from tea without sugar. It's disconcerting because you've spent all these years where you've given up sugar in your tea. You think, oh, I don't need sugar. I'm great. I'm eating the dew of the tea gods, some sort of leaf they grow. Introduced it to some boiling water, a splash of milk, and I just drink that and I'm perfectly happy. Then you discover coffee. Now, coffee is a very, very addictive drug. You buy this instant coffee and you put a spoonful of that in a cup, and then you put another spoon of that in a cup, and then you put in your splash of milk, boiling water, and 8 spoons of sugar. Because it's a very, 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 very different substance than tea. Tea and coffee are like up and down. They're exact opposites, black and white. Tea is the smell that you add to your boiling water. You're drinking a cup of water and you've added a scent to it just to make it slightly more interesting. That's what tea is. Coffee is coffee. Coffee doesn't need water in it at all. Real coffee drinkers, they put in maybe a tiny spoonful of water just to activate the ingredients in the coffee or whatever it does. Ideally, coffee would be made by getting the coffee beans and just putting them through a blender until they're somewhat liquid. Now, in practice, probably the best you can make out of that is a paste, and it's quite hard to swallow. It'd be like drinking a dry muffin. It's very hard to make muffins that you don't choke to death on, and I imagine coffee without water would be a bit like that, so you have to add some water. But you can make an espresso. I'm surprised there hasn't been a trend in these coffee shops over the last 20 years where they've tried to make smaller and smaller espressos. We can all show how macho we are. I want mine condensed to the size of an egg cup, but not one of those big egg cups. No. In fact, get one of those metal egg cups, turn it upside down, and there's a little hollow part in the underside of the stand of the metal egg cup. Fill that up with espresso leaves or whatever you make it with, and then top that off with water, and that's enough for me. That's what you say. No, strangely enough, espresso seems to have remained a standard size. You can get a double espresso, and it's just two espressos. They don't seem to reduce the amount of water per dose. No. We got double whiskey in a pub. I suppose that's the same thing, isn't it? Well, it's not the same thing as a double espresso, but you know what I mean. You go into a pub and you say, I have a measure of whiskey, please, and then you say a double whiskey, and that's two measures. So I suppose coffee providers probably think that because they have all these rules in pubs where there's a measure of everything, they can't mess with the measures. You can't mess with the measures. It's not alcohol. You're not running a bar. You're not in some position of responsibility where every ounce of liquid that you put into your patrons stands the risk of causing a fight out in the streets at 1 o'clock in the morning. No, you're not going to lose your bar license. You're running a coffee shop. Experiment with new types of espresso. Make smaller and more concentrated espressos. Just don't serve it to children, of course. Be responsible about it. If someone comes in and says they want 8 espressos, say no. You can't have 8 espressos unless you're making a podcast today. In which case, have them all drunk by about midday, because otherwise you're going to be up all night. I don't have espressos, really. I have very strong coffee before I record this podcast. I don't know if it shows. I combine it with own brand knockoff Red Bull from the supermarket. It's great. It's absolutely great. So it's probably not good to be filling up on taurine and caffeine in concentrated levels all morning, just so you can come in here and go, once upon a time there was a dog. No. But what else am I going to do? It's either this or gardening. Gardening was an option today. Now, my gardening is very different to your gardening. My gardening involves letting everything grow for 5 years and then going, oh Christ, I'm going to have to do something about this because the boiler house is getting surrounded by green stuff. So I'll get in there, I'll sit on a chair and just chop and chop and chop until I can find the boiler house. And then do the same regarding the back of the shed and wherever the patio used to be. There's a patio underneath there somewhere. So you find that by chopping away and listening to podcasts while you're doing it. Now your gardening probably involves going out and laying down a vegetable patch and planting porridge oats and tea leaves and carefully, tenderly spraying them with whatever you spray them with. Do you spray them with shit? You probably do. Manure. Is it called manure? We all know when you're growing stuff as a farmer, you use manure on your plants. But when you're growing that stuff in a vegetable garden, you don't want to call it that. In fact, you don't even want to do that. You want to just find some fertilizer that comes in some shop and you spray that on it and say, oh, this is great. Nice, healthy stuff to spray on this vegetables that we're growing from scratch because I'm going to put them on my child's plate for dinner tomorrow. These vegetables, you don't want to say that you sprayed manure on them. And you also don't want to know that you sprayed manure on them. So you get some fertilizer in a shop. It's probably got essence of manure in it. But you don't want to know about it. Maybe you don't know about it. Well, you do now. Or do you? Or am I just making that up or assuming? I'm assuming if you buy some sort of fertilizer to put on your plants, it's got essence of manure somehow in there. I presume there are nutrients in manure that you can't get from anywhere else. Well, unless you find whatever animal the manure came from, I suppose find out where they're eating and then that would have the ingredients in it. But you can't just hijack the animal's food and use it on the vegetables, can you? I suppose you can if you're anti-animal eating. I suppose that's somewhat reasonable. I made a choice today. There was a choice between clearing out another corner of the garden that's overgrown while the sun is splitting the rocks, or doing the following. Once upon a time, there was a dog, basically a dog. And this dog, he was walking along the street one day, minding his own business, taking a piss, one drop at a time. He was taking a piss in installments, as dogs do. Now, when cats do that, it's called spraying. And they're quite open about it. They're open about the fact that they don't need a piss. They're just spraying their territory. But no, a dog will have you believe that when it sprays a little bit every now and then, it's just taking its piss in installments. It'll have you believe, especially if you're a dog person, you'll fall for this shit. The dog will tell you, oh, I don't want to fill up any one place with too much liquid, cause a puddle or fill up a pothole or something that some poor child will drown in. No, so I let it out a few drops at a time. Every 5 or 6 steps, I stop and I take a very small leak. And it's not really a leak. It's not leaking out accidentally. I'm doing it intentionally. It's not like the pipes have burst and there's stuff spilling out that's out of my control. No, this is well within my control. I'm doing this on purpose. And the dog will look you straight in the face while it's telling you this. If you have peripheral vision, you'll be able to see the tail wagging, and that'll distract you from its face. It's staring you straight in the face, as if it's trying to hypnotize you. If it had the wit to hypnotize you, it would. But it's just staring you in the face, saying, oh, I've seen cats do this. They stare you in the face. Except they don't. Cats don't do that. Except maybe they do it to dogs. Do cats stare dogs in the face? I don't know. It's been a while since I've had a dog. And at the time when I had a dog as well as cats, they didn't really interact much. The cats weren't really fans of the dog. I could see their point, because the dog was fucking terrifying. Wasn't really a dog the cats would warm to, even though the dog was very, 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 very friendly. Very friendly. Very, 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 very friendly, as all dogs are. All dogs are very, 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 very friendly. Very friendly. They'll come up to you in the street and they'll just pant at you and say, hello, how are you today? What's the weather like? Any plans for a holiday? Hang on, I'm still shining your shoes for you. Would you like a haircut and a shave as well? Might as well. And of course, you'll have to say, no, no, thank you, dog. I need to save all my small talk for my next trip to, I don't know, wherever I need to go. Not the barbers. I'm not going to the barbers, because during COVID, I discovered hair clippers and I'm never going back. Never need to go to the barber again. I resent the first 30 years of my life that I spent going to barbers, when I could have just stayed at home and got out this thing and shaved all the hair off my head every few weeks and just be done with it. Now, the only one problem with that when you're shaving your head regularly is that after you shave your head, you have to have a very severe shower, get all this hair off you, change every ounce of clothing that's on you, and sweep up the floor where the hairs are, get in the shower, and get a power hose and make sure you spray every bit of your person. Get every little tiny bit of hair off you, especially if you're shaving your head regularly. You get tiny bits of hair everywhere, absolutely everywhere. If you don't wash them off, you'll regret it about 2 o'clock in the morning when you're trying to sleep and you're itching. And then it's all over the pillow, so you have to change your whole bedroom. And of course, the dog. The dog is making all this up. And this is all true. The dog has just got lucky. The dog just makes this all up as a fantasy. A stop clock is correct 2 times a day. Although, is it? Wait a minute. Is that true? Did they say a stop clock is correct 2 times a day? Has anyone ever tested this scientifically? I suppose maybe they think you don't need it. It's just a simple calculation or an observation. You can see that the clock is stopped at a particular time. It's going to be that time every day in the AM, and it's going to be that time again every day in the PM. So twice a day, the stop clock is right. But I would argue, suppose the clock stops 1:05 PM, and then you say, oh, at 1:05 AM, it's right again, and 1:05 PM, the next day, it's right again. But what about gravity? If that clock is faulty, so faulty that the hands aren't moving, then who's to say the hands are staying perfectly still? There's gravity. Gravity could be pulling that minute hand down fraction of a millimeter every day, every single day. I suppose then the clock is still correct twice a day. It's just not correct at 1:05 every day. The second day it's correct at 1:05 and 5 milliseconds. Then the next day it's correct at 1:05 and 10 milliseconds. That's not going to be of any use to you as a timepiece, is it? No, I don't think so. Unless you're using it to keep a record of something, like what time the crime happened, that someone was shot right in front of the clock, and it's a bullet, fragments of something smashed the clock and caused the stop. You're going to use that clock as evidence of what time the shooting happened at, but that clock's not going to stay at that time, so that's not even good as evidence in a crime. Unless you get the jury in and get a mathematician in front of them who's very good at explaining things and can explain to the jury that we can calculate exactly how much gravity is going to change the clock's time by every day when the hands are not working but the minute hand is succumbing to gravity gradually. And that's going to get very complicated. You're not going to do, if the glove fits, you must acquit with mathematics. No, that's too complicated for any jury. Even though many jury members, I'm sure, are perfectly well able to understand complex mathematics. But you need all 12 of them to understand it. Unless you don't care about the outcome of the trial, like you just want to see what happens in the jury room. Make one of your Hollywood movies about that. It's probably more likely to be a stage play for intellectuals. Not going to be much of a movie. There was that movie 12 Angry Men set in the jury room, and they all end up convincing each other to change their minds, and they're all very, 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 very angry. They're very angry. I think they are anyway. It's been a while since I've seen the movie, but it is called 12 Angry Men, so it's reasonable to assume that they were angry. All sitting around being angry and saying stuff for 90 minutes or however long an old black and white movie is. We went to see this 12 Angry Men in the cinema in the 1940s or whenever it was. Did they show a Bugs Bunny wartime cartoon just before? Were they show him tricking Hitler or something? They probably did. These Bugs Bunny things, these old cartoons that eventually became children's cartoons and were on the television, they started off as filler for your parents, your grandparents. They went to the cinema during wartime. And they say, oh, we'll go on the pretext that we're going to see this very intelligent film, 12 Angry Men. But they're actually just going for the cartoons. Of course, they'll use putting the newsreel in front of these movies. And that's because the only way they could get our grandparents to watch some proper information and get some proper information into their heads. None of them had a television. It didn't really exist yet. None of them read a newspaper, because the newspapers, well, there was probably a shortage of newsprint in those days because of the war and everything. There was a shortage of everything. There was a shortage of newsprint, and then there was a shortage of sugar. Sugar was rationed. So after the war, in some of these countries that were deeply involved in the war anyway, they still had the sugar rationing for years after that. And then when the sugar rationing stopped, they started bringing out cereals like Sugar Puffs. Kellogg's Sugar Puffs. Wait, was that a Kellogg's one? I'm not sure. It's a Sugar Puffs anyway. There was a cereal that came out. It had a Honey Monster on it. It was a honey-flavoured, very sugary Pops. And that came out after rationing ended, or just as it was coming to an end. And it was considered a luxury item. They said, look, give your kids loads of sugar. You haven't eaten sugar in 15 years. If they're dead and buried now, you can have sugar again. It's a big luxury. Get some sugar into your kids now. It'll be great. We just like getting them smoked salmon. Except they'll like it. As kids don't really appreciate smoked salmon. But the war is over. You've all survived the war. Now let's try this new product, Sugar Puffs. So they all crammed Sugar Puffs down their gullets for about 20 years. And then someone said, maybe we shouldn't be feeding children this for breakfast. And that's when they started playing down the sugar part of it. They said, oh, he's not the sugar monster. He's the honey monster. It's all about perfectly natural honey. And as we all know, honey is just sugar that's been through a bee's arse. Nothing particularly healthy about it. In fact, I would argue it's even less healthy than raw sugar. They put this sugar through a wasp or a bee. Oh, wait, is it the wasp or the bee who makes the honey? I don't even know how honey works. They eat the sugar off a flower and then it goes through the wasp's digestive system and comes out the other end and then it becomes syrupy. Or was it syrupy before they eat it? I don't know. Either way, it comes out the other end and then you put this in your cereal or in your stuff that you put on your toast that they call honey. They say, oh, this is great. Every jar of honey is the most stickiest substance known to man. It's even stickier than what a horse is made of. And they make glue out of horses. But this is even stickier than horse material. At least with honey, you don't have to kill a horse to get that. No, it comes out of a flower. A bee processes it. You just have to trap loads of bees in some sort of... Well, you don't really have to trap them. You just let them build their nest, but just have the nest inside a cage so they're not going to run off. These beekeepers, you see them on the television sometimes when you have a program about beekeepers or a program about mental illness. They show these beekeepers. They have a thing in their garden. They put a nest just over their face. Now, the net they put over their face sometimes, it's like the pop filter I have in front of this microphone here. It just blocks the space between my face and the microphone. The area all around it is wide open. It's like if I went into space and my helmet was just a bit hanging down in front of my face and the rest of my head was uncovered and open. No, the wasp can easily get in past that, but the beekeepers seem to be fine with this. They'll go in with this thing over their face and say, look, I've got 8 billion bees here. Isn't it great? I'm going to open the gate so they can fly around. I'm going to let them out. I'm going to let them out and they'll have a little fly around. Just like I used to live on a little mountain called Bray Head where you could see for miles around. This fella used to come up on his motorbike with 2 baskets on the back of the motorbike and he'd sit on the wall and he'd let out his pigeons out of these baskets one by one. He'd take one out, he'd watch it as it flew away or it landed on a wall nearby and then eventually went off, this homing pigeon. Presumably went back home to wherever he lived. He probably took it out and said, hello, you go off home now, I'll catch you later. The pigeon was probably going, why don't you drive me home? You've driven me here and now you're just going to dump me here and just watch me try to get home. What in the name of Christ? At least give me an errand to do to make it worthwhile. Is there anything you wanted me to deliver anywhere? Maybe give me a newspaper round. I can make this trip worthwhile. No, you're just going to dump me here and tell me to make my own way home. And then the pigeon would fly off. And he watched that for a couple of minutes. He tried to do it in a way where like someone was drinking whiskey would try to make out that they're a connoisseur of fine whiskey or wine, perhaps. Where you take a sip and you savour every moment. To look sophisticated, you try not to take another sip for a while. But he knew this fella, he'd be watching the pigeon. It had long since disappeared off over the horizon. You could tell he was bursting to take out another pigeon, but trying to slow himself down, going, oh, I'll wait a minute, I don't want to look like a glutton. Well, no, it wouldn't be long before he'd take out another pigeon out of one of the baskets on the back of his motorbike. Pigeon number one is gone home. You go home too. Now don't follow him. I want you to find your way home of your own accord. It's time you learned navigation. And of course this pigeon will say to that. He'll say, what in the name of Christ? birds fly in flocks, you know. We fly in flocks for a reason. We fly together, not as individuals, because it's efficient. It's the same reason they have teams of cyclists in the Tour de France. It's more aerodynamic to fly in a flock. You want us to go one by one. Do you know how much petrol that uses? Well, it doesn't use any, except for your motorbike. If we were artificial flying machines, I can tell you, you wouldn't be wasting energy like that letting us go one by one. No, because it's very inefficient. And you probably don't earn very much going around on this motorbike. No. And then, of course, the homing pigeon enthusiast hears none of this because the pigeon isn't really saying any of that. I'm just illustrating the ridiculousness of the situation. The pigeon doesn't say a word. He just lets the pigeon go and then he watches that second pigeon. It flies off over the horizon, flies around. I wonder where it's going now. Is it finding its home? Hope it doesn't get lost, because I'd feel partly responsible for that if my pigeon got lost after I abandoned him a fifth of the way up this little coastal mountain just to watch him fly off. But I suppose these homing pigeons know what they're doing. Well, do they? They're going home to this fella's house who's treating them like this. No, you have a chance to literally fly the nest and get the hell out of there. He's giving you your freedom and you're not taking it. You're just going home. What's that thing? What's that called? Something syndrome? You get to the point where you're being held captive in this basement for so long that the fellow who's keeping you captive can confidently bring you out to the supermarket and know that you won't run off. That's exactly what carrier pigeons are doing. So that's rather sad, isn't it? At least they're getting some fresh air and they're getting to fly, which is what birds are meant to do. So I suppose that's good. Is that good? It probably is. Anyway, this dog. I don't really have anything further to say about the dog. If you have anything further to say about the dog, you probably don't. You haven't said anything about the dog so far. Except, oh Christ, he's starting another dog thing. What's it with the dog thing? It's nothing really. It's just a dog thing. Don't think too much about it.
Into your head.
Stockholm Syndrome. That's the phrase I was trying to think of. You've been kept captive for so long in some hellhole basement, some godforsaken hellhole shithole basement, some godforsaken shithole terrible place. Been kept there possibly from an early age. Don't see the outside world for years and years, or else they put you in some prisoner of war camp or held hostage. There was a few of them in the 90s. There were some people famously held captive. There was, what's his name? There was a couple of them held in Iran, I think. And it was a big deal when I was a teenager or in my 20s as they were being released. This fella came out. He's being held captive for 20-something years in some godforsaken hellhole. He looks very well, doesn't he? He's grown a beard. When you're held hostage for that long, the first thing that happens is that your spouse says, right, if I'm going to have to raise these kids on my own, I'm sure as hell not going to carry on that thing where we said we won't have a television in the house. No, I'm going to get 12 televisions in the house. You're going to have 3 televisions each. I'm going to give each child 1 television for watching television on, another one for simultaneously playing video games on, and another one that's just a spare. There's going to be 3 of them in each child's bedroom. What happens with these parents? They'll have a child and they say, oh, this is great. We're going to be great parents. We're going to be the best parents ever. We're not going to let them have television. But we're also going to be so good parents that they won't even want a television. They'll say, oh, what's a television? Those other kids have television. We're not envious of that. We don't want the television at all. We like the way you're bringing us up. They probably won't say that explicitly. But their parents imagine that if you don't let your child have television, if you're a decent enough parent, they fantasize, these kids will not even want television. Now, I've just finished rereading a book about these parents who set out to have perfect children. They had 11 or 12 children. And just as they were having the 9th or 10th, the first of the children was in his 20s. They discovered he was extremely mentally ill with a disease that was little understood in those days, schizophrenia. And then the second oldest, was getting schizophrenia. And there was 10 more boys there waiting to grow up. They can't say, oh, this isn't going very well. We need to put the younger ones back in where they came from. No, they're all already growing. So that was a problem. Hidden Valley Road by Robert something or other. It's fascinating. And that's what I think about when I think about these parents. These parents, they say, we're not going to let our children have television, but we're going to be perfect parents. We'll raise them so perfectly that they won't even want television. And it'll be great. First thing that happens if one of you is taken hostage, one of the parents, perhaps you're one of those fellas in the 1990s who were taken hostage in some international thing, 20 years being kept hostage somewhere. They go, until that fella gets himself out of that hostage situation, television is going to raise these children. It's going to do at least 50% of the raising because there's just me now, the spouse isn't there, and I can't do 100% of it. I can do 50% of it. Can't do 100%. It's television all the way for at least 12 of every 24 hours. I suppose you could send them off to school for part of the day as well, and that'll use up some of the hours. There'll be television for half of the rest of the time. So say if they're at school for 6 hours a day, it's 24 minus 6, so that leaves 18 hours of the day to fill. Now they'll be sleeping maybe for 7 hours of that. So that leaves 11 hours to fill. So, oh, that's great. They can have television then for 11 hours a day and then they'll be owed 1 hour. So if they can't sleep or something, they can have that extra hour. Now, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking that's not what a parent would do. They wouldn't be going that extreme if you consider watching television to be an extreme measure, which it might. If you're one of these people who had decided to raise their children without television, then you consider television to be an extreme measure. Problem there, of course, if you actually have been good at parenting up until now, you and your spouse have successfully raised these children part of the way without any television. They've got used to no television. You might find that these children don't want to watch television at all. They're going to have to force them. No vegetables for you if you don't watch. How many television programs have you watched today? I want a full report before you get your dessert of how many television programs you watched. I want to know what happened on that cartoon today. And of course, the kids will cheat. They'll pretend they watched a cartoon. And they'll say, oh yes, I watched this cartoon. It was very good. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they put on those things they have around their head. Those headbands that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have around their heads that go over their eyes. More like blindfolds, except for some reason their eyes are visible in the blindfold. So presumably they drill holes in these things or cut them out with scissors. How does that work exactly? I don't know. Now, have I got that right? Well, my experience of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was watching the last few minutes of every episode. Watching it with resentment, I had no interest in that program. I was watching it because I was waiting for Zig and Zag to come back on. Zig and Zag were puppets who were on Irish television for 3 hours every afternoon. They were very entertaining. They were comedy puppets. There was the two of them and the human. They would just talk shit for 3 hours a day between the cartoons. The problem was the cartoons. I had no interest in these action cartoons. I was only interested in comedy. So when they put on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I would go and watch something on another channel for a while. And then I go, oh, this thing I'm watching is over. I'll go back and see if Zig and Zag are back on yet. And Zig and Zag wouldn't be back on yet because this turtle thing would still be going on. And then they brought in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. That was even worse. It was absolute shit. One of the worst television programs ever made. I resent the several minutes of my life that I spent watching the closing credits of that while waiting for intelligent programming by Zig and Zag to come back on. I resented that. It was a waste of my valuable time. You only get so much time to watch afternoon television as a child. By definition, the afternoon only has so many hours in it. And if any of your time is being used up by that, that's awful. If you're a television programming scheduler, don't waste children's time like that. Have an agreement with the other channel so that when Mighty Morphin Rangers Turtles comes on, a clock comes up on the other channel that's showing more interesting stuff. The shit that's on the other channel will be over when this counter reaches zero. And it can be a reciprocal arrangement between the two channels. I suppose none of that is relevant anymore since television is dead. Television is dead as a doornail, so none of that is relevant anymore. Anyway, all that was just to explain that I thought of that word, it's Stockholm Syndrome. Now, I don't know what went on in Stockholm that would inspire that. I'm not a history buff. Presumably something happened in Stockholm, which I believe is in Sweden, to inspire the phrase Stockholm Syndrome. I hope it wasn't something terrible that I should know about from my history books now. Oh, probably was. Was Sweden taken over by Hitler? And maybe something even more atrocious happened there. I don't know. Either way, I don't mean to make light of it. I can't make light of it because I don't know what happened. Something happened in Stockholm. Maybe someone took the whole place hostage. Can you do that? If you're one of these people who likes to take people hostage and raise them in your basement, could you take a whole city hostage and just tell them, stay where you are, you're a hostage now. Obviously, you can't put them all in the basement, but you can tell them, oh, you're restricted to this 10-mile zone now. I'm taking the whole city hostage. You can't leave. Half of them would never even know it. Their whole life is contained within it. The other half will go, oh, Christ, is there another lockdown? Is it COVID lockdown again? Oh, Christ. Because we all remember that. There was a while there where you couldn't leave your town. It was something like you couldn't go more than 2 miles from your home. At the time, I was living in this shithole. This absolute fucking shithole called a thigh. It's a lovely place, but it's a shithole if you can't leave for 3 weeks. It becomes a shithole. I suppose it's not really the same as being locked in a basement, is it? No. I've never been locked in a basement. Have you been locked in a basement? Maybe you have. Maybe you've lived in a basement. If you're in a basement apartment, you're probably feeling pretty shitty right now. Because you think, oh, that's my whole life. I'm voluntarily locked in this basement. Well, it's not like that at all. Is it one of those basements where there's a window? Because I don't think those should count as a basement. If you have a trench going around in front of the window and there's a window there, that's not a basement. That's just a house that's been built in a hole. Unless they fill in the trench with soil and stones and things. But no, that doesn't count as a basement. Yes, no, that's just a very low ground floor. If you built the building deep enough into the ground, you could have an attic and call that a basement. It was level with the ground. You'd have a roof door, a little thing that you walk across that goes across the trench, a little bridge that goes across the basement trench before it goes straight over to a door on the roof. You could have a ground floor penthouse attic room. Well, at least he'd enjoy the novelty of that. I could laugh at all the people down below. Delete this bit. This is all shit. Anyway, that's Stockholm Syndrome for you. I've never been to Stockholm. Have you ever met anyone who's been to Stockholm and come back? I don't think I have. Maybe they've gone and come back and they've decided not to say anything. I suppose that would be understandable. I never hear anyone talking about their trip to Stockholm. How do I think about it? Have you been to Stockholm? You probably have, but you're not going to admit it. Not that there's anything wrong with going to Stockholm, but you're not going to admit that you went to Stockholm because you don't want to get anyone into trouble. How long were you there for? Because if it's more than 3 months, then that wasn't a holiday. I wonder if you get to watch television when you're kept hostage. Maybe you do. Is it good television? Well, there's no good television nowadays, but a lot of these hostage situations, they were in the 90s. There were still some reasonably good broadcast television going on in the 1990s. Is there a problem with the young people where they won't stay up past 2 a.m.? I've noticed this with the television channels now. They all close down around 2. They used to go on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Even MTV, which I know isn't a music channel anymore. You could at least count on MTV to be available all night. No, it closes down around 2 a.m. or something. Starts up again maybe 6 in the morning. Are the young people, are they just all goody two-shoes who go to bed when the television tells them to? Maybe that's good. Maybe they need to go to bed. Maybe they need to be well rested so they can enjoy the television that's on in the evening. Maybe it's about quality over quantity. Maybe television schedulers have finally realized that the whole point of prime time is that you want everyone well rested and attentive so they enjoy prime time, because that's the television that they put most of the money into. So you don't want it to go to waste. You want people to be awake and rested to enjoy every second of this quality program that you put on between 8 and 10 in the evening. I suppose. I have no idea what's going on with television. Maybe it's just dead. Maybe it's just dead and people are watching television on the internet or something. Is that possible? Is there television on the internet? It's hard to imagine. That's like having telephone on your PlayStation. Why would you want a telephone on your PlayStation? You wouldn't. I remember when I was a teenager, I noticed that there was another version available of my clock radio cassette player that had a telephone on it. Now, this was before the days of smartphones and mobile telephones. This was just a clock radio tape player that had a telephone attachment, built in a telephone in it. And I thought, that looks cool, but why would you want it? Who wants a telephone? No. Telephones are the most hideous devices ever created. Even back before smartphones, I don't think young people realize telephones, they made a shrill noise. They start ringing sometime at 8 o'clock at night. They start ringing, and no matter how much you were used to this ringtone, it would start ringing and everyone would jump. It was absolutely terrifying. You'd leap out of your chest to be watching television. This is when television was still a thing. You'd watch television and the phone would go ring, ring, ring. It was horrifying. We never had an answering machine. That just encourages people. There was people, they had answering machines with a tape in it. They connected up to the phone, they'd put a tape up. They'd have a message of themselves playing. They'd say, "Hello, you're true to my house. I'm not there to answer the phone right now, but you can leave a message and tell me what you were going to say if I was here." And then someone would leave a message saying, "Hello, I suppose I could tell you what I was going to say if you were there. But I can't think of it now because you're not there. All I can think of now is what I would say to you if you were not there. And if you were not there, what I would say to you is..." And then your message would run out of time. It would make some noise. It would say, "You've run out of time." And then every second sitcom was about someone leaving voicemails. Leaving voicemails and then running out of time and having to leave another voicemail. I was always concentrating on the person leaving the voicemail. Situation comedy would never show the person listening to the voicemail, because that was more horror than comedy. You wouldn't put that in a sitcom. Whereas probably episodes of The Twilight Zone that were all just someone listening to their telephone messages from that era. I suppose it was the new Twilight Zone. It was on in the 80s or whatever that other thing was. Whatever the new version of The Twilight Zone was, I'm sure they had whole episodes that were just someone checking their voicemail on their old style home telephone answering machine. They'd press a button and it would go beep. And they'd hear someone saying, "Hello, you're not there, are you? No, pick up." Sometimes they'd just say, "Pick up, pick up, pick up, pick up." And then they'd hang up and they'd go away thinking, "Oh, if he picks up while he's listening to this message, I won't be there because he'll be listening to a recording. He'll just hear a tone, there'll be nobody on the line. That's a problem." So they decide, "I won't say pick up, I'll say if you're there now, pick up. But if this is a recording that you're listening to later, don't bother picking up because this is something that was recorded earlier. Pick up if you're there, but don't pick up if you're not there. You're just listening back to these recordings. Perhaps the machine should just delete this message if you don't pick up while I'm saying pick up." If the machine was smart enough, it would do that. But the machine would analyze the message and say, "Oh, this fellow is just saying pick up. You don't need to hear that unless you're there listening live now. So I'll just delete this automatically." Could have saved a lot of trouble. You can probably do that very well on smartphones now. I've had lots and lots of smartphones. I really rarely use the telephone function on my smartphone. It's not something I find useful or pleasant to do. Telephony is a hideous invention. Absolutely hideous. It's like something you creatively wanted to torture people. You wanted to really, really torture them. You say, oh, let's torture them all. Let's invent telephony. Of course, someone will say to that, they'll say telephony has already been invented. But within a society where telephony has been invented, but they haven't told the people about it. It's like one of those countries now where the only people who have access to the internet are the elites. So they have telephony, but it's only for the elite. But the elites have tried this telephony thing and they think, oh Christ, this is hideous. I don't want it either. Maybe give it to the masses instead. Give them the leftovers. Anyway, that's telephony for you. Wherever it was, two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats goes straight up to the bar counter and says, hello, can I have a pint of your finest coffee espresso, please? And the man behind the bar says, certainly not. I'm not serving a cat a whole pint of coffee espresso. Unless you mean an espresso watered down so that it fills up to one pint in liquid, I'd be fine with that. And the cat says, oh, I see. So you're happy to serve espresso to cats now as long as you water it down so it's disguised a bit. And the man behind the bar says, no, it'll be a very weak coffee. A pint of coffee. How much is that? That's at least two mugfuls, isn't it? It's a very big mug. Very, very, very big mug. One espresso in it. That's not an espresso. And the cat says, are you sure you know what you're doing here, barman? And the barman says, yes, I know what I'm doing. I'm talking to a cat who's made an unreasonable request of me. It might be reasonable if it was coming from an adult human who's about 20 times your size and therefore can handle a lot more coffee than you can. No offense, cat, but you're a little cat. We're about 2 pounds in weight. If I put an espresso into you, that would just fill up your whole body with espresso and this essence of espresso, and you'd explode. It'd be like giving the child a 2-liter bottle of Monster Energy drink or any other brand. I don't mean to pick on any particular brand. It's just I'm aware of the Monster brands because it comes in a big black can that I would imagine looks very cool to a child, because I remember as a child we didn't have these Monster Energy drinks, but we had potato crisps and potato snacks that came in black bags that looked very cool. They put things like Space Invaders and monsters on them. It's usually some spicy thing. Instead of your normal potato chip or your potato crisp, you get this obscure brand that will come in the black bag, and I always thought it looked cool, so I got that. So I imagine children look on these energy drinks in the black cans just like that. Although, one of them is called Rockstar. Now, my understanding is that the kids aren't into rock music anymore or any kind of guitar music. My understanding is that that's about 20 years out of date. The young people now listen to music that goes... Is that noise even going to come out in this recording? Because it filters out noise. Well, basically, I was making the noise of tinny pop music and dance music and techno. I was making the beat from that. I'm not going to try to do it on my harmonica. I can't do techno or whatever it is on the harmonica. Or drum and bass. Is that a thing, the drum and bass? I only know about drum and bass because at some point around the 1990s or 2000, David Bowie brought out a drum and bass album because that is what the kids were into at the time. And he did his drum and bass album. So I wasn't into David Bowie at all, but that was one of two albums of his that I enjoyed. His drum and bass album, he had songs like the following. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of them all. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid I might have got the lyrics slightly wrong, but the song was called I'm Afraid of Americans. And there's a video for it that I just saw for the first time recently. It's David Bowie running through some street in the middle of a city, some pedestrian street. It looks like he's being pursued. And they did that whole album of drum and bass, which was a style of music that the young people were into at the time. I don't think it went down as one of his most acclaimed albums. But I liked that. I also liked the one that he did about being dead that came out about 2 days before he died. Those are my two David Bowie albums that I like. I think they're both great. And what was I talking about? I don't know. I don't know. Suffice to say, I was going to say you'll see in the shops because it's a very prominent album cover, but you don't have shops anymore. You don't get music in shops anymore. But if you did, you go in there, you just look under B and you see this David Bowie album that's very striking because it's very colourful and it has a picture of him draped in, now that I think about it, I'm not sure, is that an American flag or a British flag? It's never occurred to me to even think about it. But they're both roughly the same colour. I think I assumed it was a British flag that he's draped in. But I've never examined it closer, and it's just occurred to me one of the songs was I'm Afraid of Americans. So I don't know. I'm not sure if he was literally afraid of Americans, or it was just some point he was trying to make, some clever point, I don't know. Well, anyway, that's drum and bass. It's going do 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 do, and then there's something in the bassing, I think. I wasn't into drum and bass at all, just except that album he made, which is weird. And I wasn't into albums about being dead either, but that one he brought out just before he became dead, that was very good. I liked that album. He got a jazz band to do it all, with him singing and the jazz band playing music. I thought it was great. Would have liked to see what he did with the follow-up. Presumably to do a follow-up to that, he'd have to come back to life. So then he'd have to do an album about resurrection. That's not going to happen, sadly. The poor man is dead and there's no coming back because my understanding is the minute he was dead, they went and put him through one of those fire things where they burn you and turn you into ashes and they basically threw the ashes out straight away. From what I understand, it was very quick. They burned him to a crisp and then they threw his remains somewhere where you'll never find them. There's no way of ever getting them back. Dispersed them somewhere. I don't remember the exact details. It just seemed very final. No remains left whatsoever. They burned them to a crisp and scattered them somewhere or threw them somewhere or burned them so much that there weren't even any ashes left. I don't know. Can you do that? Can you burn someone so much that there's no ashes left? Hopefully you can't, because that would be a useful thing for murderers to get their hands on. You see this on Breaking Bad and in violent TV programs, some murderers, they try to cover up their murder. They put you in a bath and they use some chemical that dissolves the body. But they had that on Breaking Bad. If I remember rightly, it dissolved the bath and the floor underneath as well. So there was a problem. So I wonder, surely it doesn't dissolve you completely, does it? Maybe it, because that would be even better. You would imagine people who want a healthy burial, instead of just being turned to ashes, would they not prefer to be dissolved entirely by chemicals? Maybe they're against the chemicals thing. Maybe chemicals are considered bad for the environment. I suppose there's that. Or maybe they just don't want to make it too complicated, or it seems unnatural to them for them to be just dissolved entirely. I don't know. Each to their own, I suppose. Are you going into your head? I think we might be done here. Are we done here? I don't know who I'm asking other than me. As if I don't matter at all in any of this. I matter. I'm the most important thing in my universe, in a way. I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I just mean, if I say other than me, who else would I ask other than me as to whether I'm done speaking here? Why would I ask someone else that? And go up to someone else and go, am I done here with this podcast recording yet? I can't tell. And they'll say, I don't know unless you let me listen to it. And I'm sure as hell not going to let anyone listen to it until it's finished and ready and edited. So that's not going to happen. I suppose I could ask one of the cats. But they're biased because they want to get into this room and get onto the spare bed, especially in the afternoon. It's particularly sunny in this room at the moment. They're probably dying to get in. So if I was to ask one of the cats, am I done here? To say, oh, yes, you are. You're done. Open the door and you pack up your stuff. We'll come in. We'll help by getting up onto the bed. Why you'd want that, I don't know. I don't know why you'd want to lie in the bed in direct sunlight on a Sunday afternoon. That sounds like hell to me. That sounds almost as bad as the activity that I had as an option today other than this, which was to go outside and sit in direct sunlight clearing a corner of the garden. No, that's hellish. Even worse, lying on the bed inside, you don't get the benefit of the fresh air, but you get the non-benefit of the sun splitting the rocks and shining directly in on you while you lie on this bed here. It's not even your bed, it's the spare bed. Why would I lie on that? I wouldn't. For one thing, it's not set up as a bed at the moment. Two of the corners of the bed, I don't think, are even touching the ground. So I wouldn't recommend lying on that. It's fine for cats, though. Cats, it's fine for cats. I just don't know why they would want to do that. They should be out playing, like normal children. If they were normal human children, I would expect them to be out playing at this moment. Say, what in the name of Christ are you doing sitting indoors with the sun splitting the rocks? Get up on your bicycle. Go and find where your friends are and tell them, I've been instructed to go out and play. I have permission to be out until 7 p.m. So I'm going to stay out here until 6:57 p.m. and then I can start walking back down towards the house. Because it's all downhill from the playing field. It doesn't take long to get back here. Thankfully, I don't have children. So I don't have to worry about the fact that they're stuck indoors on a lovely day like this, and the sun is splitting the rocks.